I think it was Sam Levinson who once said, insanity is hereditary. You can get it from your children. For any monitor parents who agree, there's a new book called What Every Child Would Like His Parents to Know, written by my guest, Dr. Lee Salk, who is director of the Division of Pediatric Psychology at the New York Hospital, Cornell Medical Center. Dr. Salk, I have three children of my own, one of them who is really highly emotional, and I really sometimes don't know how to handle his behavior. What should you do in a case like that?
What do you mean by highly emotional?
Well, he reacts very emotionally to anything that happens. If he does something that's wrong, you try to talk to him a little bit occasionally, he reacts, not violently, but he just gets emotional, and he'll start to cry, and you say, well, I want you to listen to my problem, and you don't want to hear my side of the story, and he gets like that at times.
How old is he?
He's six.
He's six. In order for me to give you a specific answer to your problem, I'd really have to know a lot more, otherwise I'm going to sound awfully glib. Much of what you describe in your child's behavior, I would consider to be perfectly normal. Children around the age of five and six oftentimes, and this is obviously not true for all children, but oftentimes are very fussy about the way things look. They want things to be just a certain kind of way. Now, they're very concrete, very literal. They want things to fit and conform to whatever the rules and regulations are that you've once set up. That could be one explanation. Another could be that perhaps you're overly concerned about these things yourself, or in some way you've imparted to your child that the child will be accepted more if he does things in this kind of orderly way, and if things are just right. What I'm getting at here is that it could be in part due to a normal, natural process of development, or it could be a learned phenomenon based upon your own values.
Well, let's talk a little bit, say, that's about discipline now, trying to bring up the children. What type of discipline should a child receive, and how early should you really start it?
Well, first off, let me explain what discipline is. Many people use discipline and punishment interchangeably.
I was going to ask you about punishment
afterwards. Discipline, in my way of thinking, is an extension of a parent's concern about the child. A feeling of love is displayed through setting rules and regulations, and that's what discipline is to me. It's a form of communication. It's a way of setting limits to what a child is allowed to do and what it is that you don't want the child to do. It's my feeling that discipline has to be established by parents when a child begins to move around in the world, which is somewhere around the eighth, ninth month of life, when a child can begin to get from one place to another. And here's where you have to begin to set limits in terms of what's acceptable and what's not. The child will test out the world to find out what's permissible. Try poking fingers in electric sockets and to see what your reaction will be to this. If a child is allowed to go beyond that period without your setting consistent limits, you may find that it's going to be rather difficult to begin to enforce limits later on.
Well, let's get into a subject that fortunately I'm not faced with right now, and that's the problem of drugs.
I think you find in some affluent communities or among middle-class children, if they are not given an opportunity for getting a sense of satisfaction out of completing a task, a sense of self-esteem, so to speak, through accomplishment, a feeling of self-worth, they may have to get that sense of self-worth some other way. Otherwise, they feel totally unimportant. Drugs provide people with that kind of feeling. It's been my experience that many well-meaning parents who have been overly critical of their children always find that there's something wrong and they can never offer them any praise for what they do that's right. You find that some of these children may easily turn to drugs. They may feel that there's no point in trying to satisfy my parents. They never seem to be happy. They're highly susceptible to the values and the influences of their peers. And if they come from a community where other kids are experimenting with drugs and where their own parents don't provide them with the kind of emotional gratification they need, then they may very well conform to the peer values. That's another element to this. I think if one wants to prevent this from happening, I think it's important, first off, to give your child a sense of trust in you, where you're honest with the child, where you're truthful in answering questions, so that the child will believe you when you say to them, you know, you shouldn't experiment with drugs. This could be damaging to your brain. It could be lethal. The child who believes you is certainly going to be influenced by that information more. If you've been inclined to lie to your child or make up stories which are untrue, when it comes to the time that you transmit valuable information, they may not believe you.
So in other words, what you're saying that if you bring your children up properly, the chances of their going to drugs would be greatly diminished.
Absolutely.
Dr. Salk, I'm afraid I'm going to have to interrupt here so that we can take care of some business. I hope that you'll stay so that we can continue this conversation.
I'd be delighted to. Thank you.
My guest is Dr. Lee Salk, author of the book, What Every Child Would Like His Parents to Know, and we're on the Monitor Beacon. Back again, and back with me to continue our conversation is Dr. Lee Salk, author of What Every Child Would Like His Parents to Know. Getting back to my situation again, and I'm sure this is the case with a great many other families throughout the country and throughout the world, there's a problem, I feel, in trying to get across to a child, especially my six-year-old, about telling the truth all the time. In other words, he did something wrong, and I don't want him to be afraid to tell me that he did something wrong, but you try to explain to him that if he tells you he did something wrong, that sometimes he's going to be punished for it, but other times he may not be, because it may not be as bad as he thinks it is. And if it is bad, though, he will be punished. But if he doesn't tell you, and you find out about it, you're going to punish him even more severely. I mean, it's very difficult to try and get him to comprehend that.
I'm delighted that you bring this up. It is, I've been asked this question, but not as often as I'd like to be asked this question. It's a dilemma, and I've seen children thrown out of schools who admitted to doing something and who should be rewarded for their honesty, but who are penalized, whereas another child who has not admitted to a crime is allowed to continue in that school. The child who's been punished for his honesty oftentimes decides, next time I'm not going to tell the truth. Now, I think that it's important to reward the truth in a certain way, but at the same time indicate to the child that something has to be done, because when you do something that's that bad or unacceptable in that way, there has to be some form of punishment. I think what you do is bring the child into the decision as to what he thinks a fair and adequate punishment would be for having done that.
Do you think you could do that with a six-year-old?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think what you can say to the six-year-old is, I'm very proud of you for having told the truth. I'm very proud of you for admitting that you had done something, but I still feel that it was something that you should not have done. And so in a certain way, we have to punish you, but I want you to decide on what you consider to be a fair punishment for that. Now, most children, in my experience, take a very extreme view on punishment. It's not unlike a child to say, well, don't feed me for 6 weeks. You know, this is sort of thing that happens. And obviously, you can be a good parent by saying, well, you know, that's really pretty bad. And I say, well, don't feed me for 3 weeks. Well, ultimately, you can work out something that the child himself feels is fair. And what you will then be doing is in a sense, enforcing what you consider to be an important sense of value values, and at the same time rewarding the child for his honesty so that you're not going to be overly punitive.
Well, I'm going to take advantage of, again, another situation in the book in regards to my family, since I have you here, if you don't mind. And that is in regards to your statement about not letting the children come into bed with you. Now, I'm assuming, hopefully anyway, that you meant in regards to sleeping in bed at night and spending time late at night in bed. Because I know my children, the first thing the two older boys, who of course can get up on their own, do, they get up in the morning, they want to come into the bedroom and kiss mommy and daddy hello and snuggle in bed. And this is something we've had them do since they've gotten around.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, I think it's one of the delights of being a child, and it's also one of the delights of being a parent.
Yeah, I know, because I really look forward to it.
Don't you? I do too. There's nothing more, you know, enjoyable. Of course, if it's not at 5:30 in the morning.
Right. Well, that's right.
An appropriate time, having kids come in and wake you up with their smiles and. I think it's a great way to start the day.
Well, that's great, because I know they look forward to it.
But when I caution parents about not having children sleep in bed with them, there are a number of reasons. One is I think it interferes with the privacy that the parents need to perpetuate a good, close relationship. It also becomes a comforting way of getting through the night, and I think that some children in the middle of the night get frightened, become upset, would like to cuddle up with a parent. And I think it's important to help the child achieve independence by your taking the child back to its bed, staying with it long enough for the child to overcome its fear and get off to sleep again, but not where you encourage this kind of thing. Now, many of my colleagues consider it absolutely unacceptable for a child to ever come into a parent's bed. I'm certainly not that extreme in that view, and I would venture to say no parent has ever been successful in keeping a child out of its bed, completely. There are times when a parent, particularly with a newborn, when a child wakes up in the middle of the night, wants to be comforted, and the parent is just too exhausted, too tired, and oftentimes they'll let the child stay in bed. This will not cause a serious emotional trauma to your child. I mean, occasionally these things happen, but I would say as a general rule, it's good to help them feel comfortable through their own independence.
Doctor, I really can't thank you enough. It's really been delightful, and I certainly hope we have an opportunity to chat again sometime.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
We've been talking to Dr. Lee Salk, the director of the Division of Pediatric Psychology of the New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center, and author of a new handbook for parents called What Every Child Would Like His Parents to Know. Excuse me, that was Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me with P.J. Ross doing the holding, the thrilling, the kissing, and the singing. by Titanic, or is it Titanic by Sultana? Whichever it is, it brings to a close this particular segment of Monitor. I'm Rick Barry, or am I Barry Rick? Well, one or the other of us shall return. Two for the money time, musically speaking, here on Monitor. First, we have a train song, City of New Orleans by Arlo Guthrie. Then it's Henry Mancini with his own Mancini Generation.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders. 25 sacks of mail. All along the southbound Odyssey, the train pulls out at Kankakee and rolls along past houses, farms, and fields. Passing trains that have no name, freight yards full of old black men, and the graveyards of the rusted automobiles. Good morning, America, how are you? Said, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the train they call the City of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Card games with the old man in the club car. Penny a point, ain't no one keeping score. Pass the paper bag that holds the bottle. Feel the wheels rumbling beneath the floor. And the sons of Pullman porters and the sons of engineers ride their father's magic carpets made of steel. Mothers with their babes asleep rocking to the gentle beat, and the rhythm of the rails is all they feel. Good morning, America, how are you? Said, don't you know me?
The Monitor Show, and on this half hour of the show, we'll be catching up on the latest sports scores, the latest music, and other assorted goodies. Music first. Neil Sedaka is going to sing the short version of a song that he wrote called Beautiful You. Now, that's what it says on the label, the short version. Okay, Neil, if we like it, we just may let you sing the long version sometime.
Ooh, la, la, you're such a turn me on.
As you know, it's Saturday, and that means there are a lot of games being played around the country. So why don't we take a couple of minutes and run down some scores for you. First of all, in baseball, it was Montreal 3 and Pittsburgh nothing. The Chicago Cubs swept a doubleheader from St. Louis, winning the first game 2-0, and the second game the score was 15-1. It was Los Angeles 7, San Francisco 4. The Oakland A's move a step closer to that division title in the American League West by downing Kansas City 2-1. The Cleveland Indian-New York Yankee game was called in the seventh after a 45-minute delay because of rain, with the Yankees ahead and winning 5-2. The Yankees are now 3.5 behind the leading team in the league, Boston. The Detroit Tigers, meanwhile, defeated Boston again, this time by the score of 7-1, as Mickey Lolich picked up his 21st win. Detroit is now 1 percentage point behind Boston. Minnesota took a game 2-1 over the California Angels. The Mets beat the Phillies 5-3. And in the role of the spoilers, the Milwaukee Brewers did it again, beating Baltimore 2-1. Baltimore now falls 2.5 games behind Boston. And if you're looking ahead to tomorrow, there are 3 important games on tap. Baltimore will be playing at Milwaukee again, Detroit's playing at Boston again, and New York will be playing at Cleveland. Now, in college football, first of all in the East, it was Holy Cross 30 and Brown 24. Delaware 64, Gettysburg 7. Nebraska just absolutely crushed Army 77-7. That's right, 77-7. It was Penn State 21, Navy 10. Penn State was a 4-touchdown favorite, but they fumbled 3 times in the first half in that ball game. It was Colgate 33 and Lafayette 14. Moving down to the South, Auburn 14, Chattanooga 7. Maryland 28, VMI 16, North Carolina 34, North Carolina State 33. That must have been a great ball game for that old rivalry. It was Stanford 10 and Duke 6. Tennessee 45, Wake Forest 6. Tulane 24, Georgia 13. And West Virginia 48, Virginia 10. In the Midwest, it was Colorado 38, Minnesota 6. Georgia Tech in a big upset over Michigan State, 21-16. It was Notre Dame 37, Northwestern 0, as Northwestern has failed to score in their two games so far this season. It was Washington 22 and Purdue 21, Wisconsin 31, Syracuse 7, Iowa 19, Oregon State 11, South Carolina 55, Illinois 20, Kansas 52, Wyoming 14, Oklahoma 68, Oregon 3, TCU 31, Indiana 28, Baylor shut out Missouri 27-0. It was Iowa State 44 and Utah 22. And out in the far west, it was San Jose State 17, California Berkeley 10. And in that game, San Jose State was a 20-point underdog, so that's quite an upset. And unfortunately, we don't have a score in that UCLA-Michigan game, and if we can get one, we'll try and give you the score before we go off the air here. Cass Elliott's here with a song for us. Elliott, also known as the Baroness. I understand that even though she divorced the Baron, she kept the title. It makes getting a hotel room so much easier. Now, where else would you get such inside information but on the Monitor Beacon? Rick Barry here, and since this is my first monitor show, they told me that I could play music by my favorite performers. And one of my favorites happens to be Johnny Mathis. I had the pleasure of seeing Johnny Mathis in person for the first time this past week out at Lake Tahoe, where I was playing in a golf tournament. And believe me, he is absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed the tremendous range that he has in his voice. And what we're going to do for you now is to give you a little bit of a sampling as to just what Johnny Mathis does in his nightclub act.
I got love. I got love. I got love. I got love, 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 love. I got love. I got love. Sweeter than a flower, growing by the hour. I got love. Sunshine, shine.
Beautiful sound I ever heard. Maria, 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 Maria. All the beautiful sounds of the world in a single word. Maria, 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 Maria. I've just met a girl named Maria, and suddenly that name will never be the same to me. Maria, I just kissed a girl named Maria, and suddenly I found how wonderful a song can be. Maria, say it loud, and there's music playing. Say it soft, and it's almost like praying.
Maria. I'll never stop saying Maria. Say it soft, and it's almost like praying. Maria, I'll never stop saying Maria. Beautiful sound I heard, Maria. If we only have love, then tomorrow will dawn, and the days of our years will rise on that morn. If we only have love, to embrace without fears, we will kiss with our eyes, we will sleep without tears. If we only have love, with our arms open wide, then the young and the old will stand at our side. If we only had love, love that's falling like rain, then the parched desert earth will grow green. If we only have love for the hymn that we shout, for the song that we sing, then we'll have a way out. If we only have love, we can reach those in pain, we can heal all our wounds, we can use our own names. If we only have love, we can melt all the guns, and then give the new world to our daughters and sons. If we only have love, with nothing at all. But the little we are, we'll have conquered all time, all space, the sun and the stars.
Great Johnny Mathis. Speaking of great, it's been great sharing part of Saturday night with you. I really had fun, and I hope that you did too. I'm Rick Barry. Have a good Sunday.